Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Mark Titus has really made something out of his college career as a walk-on for the Ohio State University basketball team from 2007 through 2010. In an era when a sports blog isn't that big of a deal, he had decent success with his popular but now defunct, I guess, blog Club Trillion. He took the blog a step further, well, several steps further, I should say, and wrote a real book, 257 pages. It's a story that ends in good Buckeye fashion with the time-honored refrain, "And Michigan still sucks." He also is a contributor at Grantland.com. Mark Titus joins us in the studio for a little chat about college basketball. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me.
The name of the book is Don't Put Me in, Coach. My incredible NCAA journey from the end of the bench to the end of the bench.
Yeah. That title stems from kind of my attitude towards being on the team, and that after my sophomore season, when we had gone to the NIT, which is like, you know, the lesser tournament, the tournament
you... Which I learned from reading your book.
Yeah, exactly. That's a tournament you don't want to be in. It's like being the best of the worst, I guess you could say. We went to the NIT. We won the NIT, but I was playing really well in practice that year, and I still wasn't getting any playing time. So I kind of like made the decision after that season. I was like, if I can't play when I'm playing well and the team's not very good, then I'm never going to play. And I kind of just said, I can either get mad that I'm not playing and just get down about the whole situation, or I can realize that I'm in a great situation. And, you know, there are thousands of people that would love to even for a day be able to do what I was doing every single day with the team and have the opportunity I had. So I decided to just have as much fun as I possibly could, because I knew that I didn't really have a pro career on the horizon. So I had 2 years left to play basketball, and I just wanted to have as much fun as I could in those 2 years.
What's the relationship between people in your position on a team like, you know, powerhouse like Ohio State and the stars who are NBA bound and have been stars probably their whole lives?
For me, that's like, I know a lot of teams are probably different, but for me, there wasn't really that big of a deal. I mean, if you would have hung out with us, our team, outside of basketball, you wouldn't really know. I mean, you know, the tall guys are probably the better players, you know, but you wouldn't really know who the best guys are based on like the attitude of the group. You know, it's not like the stars are the ones that are dominating the conversations when we're hanging out or anything like that. So, I mean, off the court, I was treated just like every other guy on the team, and that was pretty cool. And our team got along really well. But on the court, you know, obviously I was treated a little bit differently. I wasn't quite as important as some of those other guys.
My guest is Mark Titus. He's a sports blogger and author of Don't Put Me in, Coach: My Incredible NCAA Journey from the End of the Bench to the End of the Bench. He played for Ohio State University on its basketball team from 2007 through 2010, and he wrote about it in his blog, Club Trillion, and he writes about it in detail in Don't Put Me in, Coach. You grew up in Indiana. Your mom played basketball at Indiana. That was pretty cool. But when Bobby Knight was fired, I'm not quite sure how old where that worked in your dreamscape, but that obvious dream was squelched then.
Yeah, I mean, my mom will want me to correct you and say that she played at Purdue, which is the big rival to Indiana. She would not be happy.
I'm
with
really
that.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's just, my mom played at Purdue when like Title IX had passed. So she was on one of the, I think she was on the very first Purdue women's basketball team ever, which it was fun to hear her stories about how, you know, like she traveled and like she said they didn't even play some of the teams in the Big Ten because they were too far away and they couldn't drive the bus, and like now we're taking chartered flights and all that kind of thing. So that was fun to hear those stories. But my dad went to Indiana. I grew up a big Indiana basketball fan. Obviously, most people who grow up in the state are. It's kind of like football here in Ohio.
Right.
And Bob Knight was a hero of mine. I mean, that was like the first thought I can ever remember having was I want to play basketball at Indiana for Bob Knight. He was fired when I was, I think, 14. Not that I would have been able to play for him anyway, but you know, that's a good excuse to fall back on. When he was fired, though, it kind of like Indiana kind of lost its luster for me, you know. I still, you know, was an Indiana fan and liked to watch their games, but it wasn't like as big of a deal as it once was. And so I wanted to go to school, to a big school though, because my mom had gone to Purdue, my dad had gone to Indiana. I had an older brother who went to Indiana. So all the idea of what college was to me was a big Big Ten school, and that's like kind of what I wanted to do. But I wasn't good enough to play at the Big Ten schools, so I didn't get recruited by any of the Big Ten schools. But a couple of my friends, Greg Oden and Mike Conley, who I'd played AAU basketball with since I was in eighth grade, they got recruited by Ohio State, and yeah, Indiana wasn't. I wanted to go to a big school. I decided basketball wasn't really that important to me, and so they suggested I come to Ohio State, and I thought about it. I mean, I wanted to go to Indiana a little bit, but it wasn't as big of a deal, like I said, that it used to be. So I was like, yeah, why not? I'll go to Ohio State, and that's kind of how I ended up here.
So you just applied to Ohio State. You got in.
Yeah.
Which isn't bad in and on its face at the beginning, but then you just walk on. How does that work?
I actually applied to Ohio State, and I decided to come here before I even visited the campus. I was like, looking back, it was a terrible life decision I made, like, you know, without even giving it any thought.
You wouldn't recommend it?
No, I would not recommend choosing your college just on a whim like that, but it worked out well for me. I used my connection with those guys who were like two big time recruits for the basketball team. I used my connection and I rode their coattails. I have no problem admitting that to get a job as a basketball manager. And that role was described to me as like I would do drills and I would practice with the team a little bit and I'd run scout team type thing. That's what they said a manager would do. But I got there on the first day and they were like, just go fill up water bottles and film practice. And, you know, I was doing all the stuff that I didn't.
The grunt work.
Yeah, exactly. The grunt work. And so I kind of like wanted to quit immediately, but my dad told me to stick with it. But after a week, I just couldn't do it anymore. I was like, this isn't really for me. This isn't what I wanted to do. So I quit doing that. And then like 2 weeks later, a couple guys had gotten hurt in practice. They were like spraining their ankles and couldn't practice anymore. And we only had 11 guys on the team at the time. So when two guys got hurt, we were down to nine. They were down to nine guys and they couldn't even run a 5-on-5 scrimmage in practice, which is like a big deal to, you know, that's
at OSU.
Yeah. At OSU, there's only nine healthy guys on the team. And, you know, it's a big, like a lot of the practice consists of five guys playing another five guys, you know? So we only had nine guys and they needed a 10th. So they asked me to walk on and I thought it was just going to be for, until those guys got healthy. But, and I actually like went into it. I wasn't even that excited about it when they asked me, cause I thought it was just like going to be like a 3-day, you know, I'm a practice player thing, but, I don't know. And then they told me that I'm actually on the team. And then even then I didn't really think it was going to last very long. And I must've done something right. Cause I stayed for 4 years.
Well, you've been playing, basketball for a really long time. You were a very tall little kid.
Yeah.
How tall about your growth situation? Because you're what, 6'1", 6'2"?
I'm 6'4".
6'4", okay. Well, yeah. You were sitting down when I walked in the studio, so I can be forgiven that. But you started out tall.
Yeah, I was actually 6'4 in eighth grade, which is like terrible to think back on. I was always really, really big, and that's why I got interested in basketball, obviously, because it helps to be big. But I was pretty good when I was younger. Not that, like, that matters, you know. Like, everyone kind of has their story about being really good when they were little. But, I mean, I was pretty good. That's kind of how I got on Mike and Greg's AAU team, because they had a really good team. Like, our team was probably the best team in the country. We were the best team in the country. But I mean, I had no business being on that team. But when I joined the team in eighth grade, I was 6'4". I was pretty big, you know. I was a decent player. But yeah, I stopped growing, and
There was a particular skill you had. Was it shooting?
Yeah, I can
from the outside.
Yeah, that's what I could do pretty well. Yeah, that's about it. But I'm not really athletic, and I'm not very big, so that's about it.
I have watched the Mr. Rainmaker video you did to prove that you actually have some basketball chops. It was fun. You're a good outside shooter, obviously. But why did you feel like you should make a video of yourself shooting a bunch of baskets?
The video was
in all different kinds of ways.
Yeah, that was just kind of a stupid 80s kind of, I don't know. It wasn't. I had two purposes with that. One was to make people laugh.
I did,
and that was the first goal. But the second goal, like you said, was to prove that I wasn't that bad. I don't really know. My friend just is a big fan of classic rock music, and he bought a Warrant CD, the Cherry Pie album or something, And he was just listening to it, and all of a sudden this song Mr. Rainmaker came on, and that was really where the idea came from. He's just like, there's this song called Mr. Rainmaker by Warrant. Wouldn't it be funny if you were like making it rain with the song? Because that's like a basketball term. If you're, you know, shooting deep shots and making them, it's called, you're like making it rain. That's kind of a, so he's like, wouldn't it be funny if we just made like a video of that? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe, I said, we'll shoot it and kind of, you know, you can edit it a little bit. And if it looks kind of funny, I guess we'll put it on YouTube or something. And he did. And I thought it was pretty funny. So we just put it up there, and I didn't know how people would take it. And it was pretty popular, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. 800,000 hits or something, like maybe more by now.
I don't know.
You said in your blog post last October that you wrote the book with 18 to 34 year old males in mind, and it sounded like an apology to the rest of us.
Yeah, it kind of is. I was telling you, off the air, that when people tell me that they read the book and they aren't in my demographic, I kind of groan a little bit, because I'm not actually like that crude of a guy in real life. But that's just kind of what I think is funny, you know. I'm a 24 year old guy, so that's kind of my sense of humor. But yeah, I wrote the book though as if I was, and this is how I've written like my blog and everything I've ever written, is that I'm sitting at a bar with somebody and we're having a beer, and they asked me something about like, hey, what was it like playing basketball at Ohio State, for example, with the book? And then what I would tell them is what's in the book. That's how I would say, you know, this is what it was like. So, I don't know. That's just like how me and my friends talk to each other, and that's kind of our thing. So,
well, I thought it was funny, and I don't know what that means, but there were a lot of funny moments in it, and it was really great to get the insights about the other characters, particularly Greg Oden. A lot of sports writers, I'm sure, kind of hung on every word when it came to him back in the day. When we return, we're going to continue our conversation and talk about some of those stories with Mark Titus. He's a sports blogger and the author of Don't Put Me in, Coach, My Incredible NCAA Journey from the End of the Bench to the End of the Bench. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today. WOSU Public Media presents the Chefs in the City online auction. You can bid now on fabulous Chefs in the City culinary theme packages. Items close every Thursday, and new packages are added each week. Bid on items such as a private stand-up wine tasting and hors d'oeuvre reception for 20 at the refectory, or discover new Mexican cuisine with a taco fiesta bar for 10 people from Chili Verde. But hurry, these packages and more close on Thursday, May 31st. All proceeds benefit children's educational programming on WOSU. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to view all items up for bid.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Information about how Montgomery & Associates can help you achieve your financial goals is at themontgomerysolution.com.
My guest is Mark Titus. He's a sports blogger and author of Don't Put Me in, Coach, My Incredible NCAA Journey from the End of the Bench to the End of the Bench. Mark was on the OSU basketball team 2007 through 2010, played with some quite the luminaries of the day. It was at the time, after a couple years, I think you started your blog.
Yeah.
What was the moment when the idea for the blog came about?
Yeah, the blog kind of came as a, it was started as a way of making fun of myself before other people could make fun of me.
Okay.
It was started completely out of my own insecurities. I don't know, like I thought that back home in Indiana, people were laughing at me for not playing because I had been like a pretty good high school player, and
but
here
you
I
were
was.
On the OSU team.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is just how I saw it in my mind, that like I thought that people were. I mean, that is true. Like, everyone back home was like really excited that I was on the team, and they didn't even care how much I played. But to me, I was like, everyone's making fun of me for not playing. I'm probably, you know, the butt of all the jokes back home and all that kind of thing. So I thought, if I make fun of myself first, And then people make fun of me, it won't work because I will say, look, I've already been making fun of myself for this. So I started the blog. Yeah, that was initially just like my own insecurities, just to be self-deprecating and all that. But then once it kind of it became popular and people could identify with my stories, and I realized that I kind of flipped my attitude, and I was like, wait, this is kind of fun. I don't really want to play, like this is a cool gig that I get to be a bench warmer. I have no pressure on me in the games. People don't hate me when we lose, that sort of thing. And it became a little, it had a life of its own and became pretty fun.
What do you want to know about OSU basketball from the 4 years that Mark Titus spent warming the bench as a walk-on from 2007 through 2010? You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Greg Oden's part in your story has been of great interest to a lot of sports writers who have written about the book, I've noticed. Mm-hmm. They always mention Greg Oden.
Yeah.
Your relationship with him predates OSU, as you mentioned earlier. So tell us how you did meet him, how that worked out, how you got to know him, because there are a lot of guys on the team.
Yeah.
I guess he was probably the best.
Yeah.
And then tell us the story about Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. Okay. Well, I met Greg initially. We had played. I had been on. We played AAU together. And AAU, for those who don't know, is just like summer club basketball. So you kind of get the best players from each school team, and put them on one team, and you form an AAU team that way. I was on a different team, and Greg and Mike Conley, who also played here, were on the. We played against them. And I played really well in the game against them this was like way back in like seventh grade or something. I had a really good game. And remember back then I was 6'2 or 6'3, so mm-hmm. I was big and I could do a lot of things. So I played really well against them. And Mike's dad, who was the coach of their team, was impressed enough by me to ask me to join their team for the next season. So, they were one of the best teams in the country, and it was a great opportunity. So I thought, of course, that'd be awesome. So I joined the team. Back then, Greg was really, really uncoordinated. He was like 6'9" in eighth grade, I think. And he wore the rec spec goggles, that like, I don't know, that they kind of have their own little, I don't know. He was pretty uncoordinated, and he was kind of a goober, I think is the word I used in the book, which is kind
a
of funny
nerd.
To look back. A little bit of a nerd, yeah. So anyway, me and him got along real well just right off the bat because I was always a bit of a nerd myself. I don't know. I always kind of cared about school more than basketball, which is like kind of what you're supposed to do, but like for a lot of the guys that's not the case. So me and Greg just kind of hit it off, and initially it wasn't because he was like a big time recruit that I became friends with him, which is like I think what a lot of people think, that I just kind of like leached onto him because if he is so good, but he really wasn't that good back then, and he'll tell you that too. But we just kind of had a good relationship, and we had a lot in common, and yeah, the story, like you said, in Vegas, we were out in Vegas for a tournament when I think we were 18, and there's a concert with Ashanti, who was like a R&B singer that all the guys really liked, and I'm not really into R&B. I'm more of a country music kind of guy, so I didn't really want to go to this concert. So me and my dad were going to go to a magic show. And Greg asked me if I was going to the concert with the rest of the guys, and I said no, that's not really me. Me and my dad are going to the magic show. And he goes, oh, can I come with you? Because I don't want to go to the concert either. And I was like, really? That's kind of surprising, because I thought, like he was like this great basketball player, and I thought like every basketball player I've ever met loves R&B music, and it's kind of, they just kind of go hand in hand together. But yeah, he just kind of like he defies every stereotype you could have about a big time basketball player, and from that regard, it was kind of refreshing because he was just a down to earth guy, and he was just a lot of fun to hang out with.
Alex in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question for Mark. I'm a big fan of Frank DeFord and Brian Gumbel and some other reporters. And I was wondering, does he ever see himself evolving from just the humor-based writing to any an intersection of sport and society? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. Becomes, in other words, getting serious.
Getting serious. I don't know if I ever can. I mean, like, I love... I love basketball very much, and I've always thought that I could coach basketball. That seems like something that really interests me. So from that regard, like, I mean, you'd obviously have to take it pretty seriously to do that. But I just love having fun and laughing and not taking anything really that seriously, which probably isn't a great thing to say because I don't know. I should probably, you know, take some things seriously.
I guess we'll check it when the book sales come in. Yeah. You know, when the numbers come in, we'll decide
so
whether it's good.
I mean, I could get serious, I guess, but I don't know. I like having fun and making people laugh as much as I can. So,
Alex, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And my guest is Mark Titus, sports blogger and the author of Don't Put Me in Coach, My Incredible NCAA Journey from the End of the Bench to the End of the Bench. His career at The Ohio State University and their basketball team is what we're talking about right now. If you have a question or comment for him, once again, 614-292-8513. You set a record for the most individual career wins in Ohio State basketball history, and I'm kind of a dork, and I was thinking, how? Of course, you were there the longest.
Pretty much.
Right?
Yeah, I just got lucky. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I played like in 50 games, or not even 50, I played in like 38 games, I think, which is kind of, I think the record I had was 110 wins, and I've only played in 38 of them, and in those 38, I played like a couple minutes in each game, so... yeah, I was just pretty much lucky. I played in the just like a really good stretch of Ohio State basketball. My record has since been broken by David Leidy, but he played for 5 years and I played for four, so I'm counting mine as the 4-year record. And I think William Buford, who's a senior on the team right now, might break my record, but I don't know. Yeah, it's fun to say that I had a record night.
When they take you on as a walk-on, do you get a scholarship, and how does that work?
Well, I got a scholarship my first 2 years because they had extra ones. You get like 13 scholarships every year, and like I said, that first year we only had like 11 guys. So when I joined the team, it was kind of a use it or lose it situation, I think, with the scholarship. So they just gave it to me. But then I ended up getting it taken away after my sophomore season because they had already like recruited a bunch of different guys. I like to tell people that, you know, Coach Motta was mad at me or something, but that's not actually the case. It was just more of like if they had extras, I got it, but if not, then no. So.
I found myself spending a lot more time eyeing the guys still in their warm-ups.
Yeah.
You really humanized them for me, you know, jumping up from the bench to cheer and clap and air pump and all that with their fists and stuff. And when the team scored, you said the stereotypes about them and walk-ons like you are unfortunate. You know, it's the Rudy thing.
Yeah, it's the I mean, Rudy has kind of ruined all of us because, you know, they think that we're Rudy's a great movie, and I love the story and all that. But, I'm kind of the exact – I'm like the anti-Rudy, I guess you could say, is that, like, I didn't really want to get in the game necessarily, and I wasn't really gung-ho on all the things Rudy was. But yeah, I mean, the bench warmers, like you said, I watch them too. Like whenever I watch games, it's a lot of fun. I think that's what you know. People ask me what the biggest, what the coolest thing about that I accomplished with my blog, like what's the take home point, I guess, of all of this. And I guess ultimately, what I'm proudest of is maybe that I showed that bench warmers, I think, are the coolest guys on the team. Like they have the most personality and have the most fun. Which is something you don't know because no one ever talks to them. No one ever wants to interview them. No one ever has a reason to talk to them, you know. But if you get to know the bench warmers on the team, I mean, they're some of the most unique and crazy guys because they're not as good at basketball, so they have other things going on in their lives that make them, you know, interesting I don't know. So yeah, it's fun to watch them on the bench though, because like every team has different guys that do different things, and you can kind of I've been around enough to like kind of tell the personalities of the guys just based on what they do during the game. So that's pretty fun.
You know, one thing we haven't talked about yet, and we can spend plenty of time talking about it, is your role as the prankster, jokester.
Yeah.
I mean, it's extreme. It's really, really funny to read it, and I don't want to, you know, go through every little detail, but. The story you tell about when the big shots are getting there, being interviewed, and how you distract them.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds sort of stupid, but it's really funny what you would do.
It, yeah, I would. Yeah, I would. I would stand behind the interviewer and just try to get their attention and throw them off because I mean, none of our guys like had professional. I mean, we're not good at interviews. I'm sure
no one groomed them for
I'm
this.
Sure. Yeah, anyone listening to me right now is like, of course you're not. but yeah, we were never really like groomed for interviews or anything like that. So I would. I would just step behind the person interviewing them and just try to distract them as much as possible and kind of throw off their train of thought. And I had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, I kind of pictured, as you said, what's the actor from, he does the crazy movies. Shoot.
Oh, I think it's Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
Yeah, Jim Carrey was, yeah. Yeah, my favorite was when we played at the Final Four, there was like a media day where, I mean, it was just the big day for all the media to come and get their interviews and all. It was a couple of days before the first game. And we had an open locker room, and they set out a bunch of chairs for all the players to sit in, and then, like, you just sit down in your chair and you wait for people to come up and interview. And I was a freshman walk-on, so obviously no one was coming up to interview me. So I just kind of sat there for about 10 minutes, and I realized I'm just wasting my time sitting here because no one wants to talk to me. And I look over, and Greg has, like, 60 people just hounding him and shoving little recorders in his face trying to get a quote from him or whatever. So I was bored, and I thought it'd be fun to kind of mess with Greg a little bit. So I grabbed my cell phone, and I joined the reporters, and I'm, like, pushing them out of the way. I'm trying to get my cell phone as close to Greg's face as I can. So I'm standing off to the side, and I actually, like, start touching his face with my cell phone, and it's kind of, like, distracting him a little bit. So I did stuff like that that was it kept me entertained, and I'm sure it annoyed my teammates. But
well,
that's,
I wonder,
that's for the best, I think.
I want to know what they thought about the book, but we could talk about that in a little while. What did they think about you and when you turned into this? It sounds like you were always sort of a joker,
yeah,
prankster kind of a kid, but
they loved it when it wasn't them that I was picking on, you know what I mean? Like, it was always everyone, the other 10 guys on the team were laughing, but the one other guy that was getting picked on didn't always love it. I don't know, they kind of like knew that was me. I mean, Greg and Mike had, like, I've been saying all along, like, we've known each other since eighth grade, so just being around them for that long, like, they kind of understood but that's just me. I like to have fun, and I don't really mean anything by it. It's kind of like, if I'm not picking on you, then I don't like you, you know? So they kind of saw it that way. But I don't know. It was, to be honest, all of the guys picked on each other equally as much. Maybe I did a little bit more, but you just don't know about them because they didn't write a book and they didn't have a blog, so you don't know that they picked on me too. It's just kind of the camaraderie we had. Our whole team was kind of like that, and I don't know. I was probably the worst offender. But
what kind of role or relationship did you have with Coach?
I had a great relationship with Coach. I still do. He's very much a player's coach. In that, like, he trusts all of his players, and he. It kind of sounds stupid to say, but he's kind of like a friend first. You know, like, I don't think he'd be happy with me saying, like, a father figure, because he's not that much older than me, I don't think. But he's kind of like...
I think he probably is, but...
yeah, I don't know. But he's just a guy, like, I enjoy talking to about not anything, like, other than basketball, too. And that's what's, like, awesome about him, is that he's got a lot of different interests, and he's got a great sense of humor. And that's kind of how I was able to get away with some of my pranks and all that kind of stuff, is because... he just trusts his players, and I had a certain responsibilities every day in practice that I had to do, and as long as I did those responsibilities, and he didn't really care what else I did.
What'd you have to do?
Well, I mean, just like certain drills I would have to, like, they would need me for, and in scrimmage situations they need me for. Like, he would print out this sheet of what the practice is going to look like, and then they kind of say, like, we'll need you for this, this, and this. But then everything else they didn't need me for, he didn't care what I did. And I mean, that sounds bad, that like I could just be a loose cannon just doing whatever, but to me it was pretty awesome, because it was just like, it was like going to college versus going to high school, where like if you go to high school and you're about to graduate and you're taking all these stupid classes, but you have to be there from 7 to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And then you go to college and you're like, wow, I just have to go to one class today and then one to, you know what I mean? And that was kind of the situation where I was like,
it's your time.
I just go do my thing, and then he doesn't care what else I do. And it's not like I would skip practice or just screw around all the time, but you know, it was nice to know that he trusted me, and yeah, so he's a great guy, and I still have a great relationship with him.
An email from Julie. She says, I'm just curious to know what Mark is doing now post graduation, and what his future plans are, and what was his major?
My major was marketing, so I guess in a way I'm kind of using my degree because I'm marketing my blog, I guess you could say. But What I'm doing right now, I'm writing a college basketball column for Grantland.com, which is a ESPN finance site. It's kind of new. It started last summer. Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all I'm really doing now. And I wrote the book, obviously. So, and I don't really know what I want to do, which I think is good and bad, you know, because my entire career at Ohio State, I had plans for. I mean, I showed up on campus. I was a math major, I think, and I was pre-med, and I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon, and I wasn't playing basketball. And then when I graduated, I had terrible grades. I was
really
I was a basketball player. I mean, like, so my point is that, like, every time I plan for something and I think it's going to go a certain way, it just completely does the opposite, it seems like. So I've learned to not really plan too much, which is something my parents I don't think are exactly thrilled about. But
I wonder how the team members, how they do keep up their grades in general. And it just seems like such a grueling schedule.
Yeah.
And how they manage that.
It's a huge time commitment for sure. The good thing is that being on the basketball team, you have access to any tutor you would ever need. And if you're struggling, you can get individual attention as much as you want. I mean, my grades, they weren't bad. They were just like, I was a really good student in high school, and I wasn't quite as good.
You weren't working up to your potential.
That's pretty much what it was. And then once I started my blog, I kind of, like, you know, dedicated my free time to that more so than studying. I had senioritis and all that kind of thing. But Aaron Kraft this year was a first team academic All-American.
Right.
So he's doing well academically. I mean, you can do both. You can play and get good grades. But you just have to, like, work at it.
He can't count to three penalties, however.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
614-292-8513. You can email us, as did Julie, at allsides@wosu.org if you want. My guest is Mark Titus. He's a sports blogger. He's blogging for Grantland right now. And he's also the author of a new book, Don't Put Me in, Coach, My Incredible NCAA Journey from the End of the Bench to the End of the Bench. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Hey, did you hear car talk last week?
See, this is a case of big brother bullying little brother. I allowed him to bully me.
What?
I what did I say? We have run into this a lot with Quest. And then I was confronted with, whoa. Whoa means Gus.
For more well-reasoned car advice, join us this week for Car Talk.
And Car Talk is tomorrow at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock for All Sides Weekend and a discussion of Ohio travel with the Nature Conservancy in Ohio and the Ohio Humanities Council joining the program. That's All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon.
Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, conducting a study to determine if dietary supplements and individual therapy can improve functioning in children with depression and bipolar disorders. Details on participation at 293-4908.
75 degrees in downtown Columbus. Partly sunny skies today, warming up to a high near 90. There is a chance of a pop-up shower today. Also, that slight chance of rain continues tonight, a low of 65 degrees. Partly sunny for Saturday and another warm day, a high of 92. Sunshine and a high of 92 on Sunday as well. And for Memorial Day, more sunshine and, you guessed it, a high around 90. This is 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Mark Titus. He's a sports blogger and author of Don't Put Me in, Coach, My Incredible NCAA Journey from the End of the Bench to the End of the Bench. He was a member of the Ohio State University basketball team from 2007 through 2010. He started a blog in his third year, I think the third season with them, and it was called Club Trillion. He became quite famous for that, not just among OSU fans, but at different games in the opposing teams all the time. You were getting attention for
it. Yeah, it became pretty popular because I think a lot of people can identify with the bench warmer role. You know, like anybody who's ever played sports at some point has had to sit on the bench. Even like Michael Jordan had to sit on the bench at one point, you know, and it's kind of like that role. I didn't know it at the time when I started it, but it makes sense now looking back, because it's just like all the stories I wrote, people would write in and say, man, that sounds just like when I was in high school, or just like me and my friends used to do when we were, you know, in college and sitting on the bench of whatever sport we played, you know. So I think people could just identify with it and just had a lot of fun with it. And I kind of turned I think I turned benchwarming into kind of a fun thing instead of something to be ashamed about. And it kind of became popular, especially among all the college basketball walk-ons. And even now, like, I get emails all the time from other walk-ons around the country who are big in the Club Trillion movement, I guess you could say. So, it was just a lot of fun. Yeah.
You were on the team. Were you ever worried that you were going to write something that would you know, I wondered if they censored you at all, anything like that. I'm surprised if they didn't.
Yeah, I had a couple talks with the appropriate people. The only time that I was like ever really reprimanded was when we had to sign per diem sheets, which like every time we went on the road, we would get like $50 a per diem to spend on food and stuff. We had to sign our name on the sheets, and I noticed that all my teammates just scribbled their name and they didn't actually like write. They just kind of took the pen and just scribbled. And I thought, if they can scribble, I can write anything I want, right? That makes sense, because they're not actually signing their name. So I started making up fake names, and I was writing like Mickey Mouse and you know, just whatever. I wrote like Thad Mata a couple times or whatever, just messing around. And then I wrote about it on my blog because I thought it was just stupid and it made for a decent story. And the compliance office found out about that, and they called me into their office and pulled out every single per diem sheet over the course of my career and made me sift through every single one of them and re-sign them. Which was kind of a pain, but that was pretty much the only time I ever like got in trouble, quote unquote. But I don't know. I think I always like walked the line pretty well and knew not when to not cross it.
So what about how have your teammates, your former teammates, responded to the book now? Because there's a lot of stories in there that
there are a lot of. I don't know how many have read it, to be honest. I know that there's
one. Don't they have their agents skim it for them or anything?
No. Some of them have contacted me and weren't necessarily upset, but just kind of like, I don't know, did you really have to say that type thing? But I don't know. I think they all understand that it's in good fun. My goal wasn't to make anybody look bad. I actually left out a lot of stories that would have.
I wanted to ask you what you left out.
I left out. I mean, I wrote the book. I put in the first manuscript, had every story I had, good, bad, or otherwise. And I don't know. As I was like reading through them, there were some that were just like, what does this story accomplish? And some of them, the only answer to that question is to make this guy look bad. You know, like, it wasn't even that great of a story. It was just to make somebody look bad. And I was like, that's not what I want to do. I don't want this book to be about that. I'm not trying to bring anybody down. But at the same time, I value honesty. And I wanted to write the most honest, like, I wanted to let the readers into a Division I program and get the feel of what it's like. And I thought if I take out some of the best stories just because somebody looks bad, you're not really getting the full effect. So, I don't know. I think I did a good job, but that's, I mean, I'm obviously going to think that, but, I had the coaching staff read it. So a few of my coaches read it and they seemed to think it was okay with everything. So, I mean, if my teammates are upset, then they don't know me well enough.
I was interested that you sometimes were willing to make yourself look bad.
Yeah.
Because you sometimes did cross the line.
Yeah.
And there was one, you know, you just let your sense of humor and your sense of the ridiculous take over and it became inappropriate, even by your standards.
Yeah.
And one of them was one, I can't remember the name of the player, but you were getting ready to make fun of him because he was scared to fly. And
yeah.
I think you're coming back from Happy Valley or something.
Yeah.
You want to tell us that story?
Well, yeah, one of my teammates, Othello Hunter, you might remember, he was scared to fly, and we had hit a huge patch of turbulence. There was a big snowstorm or something on our way back from Happy Valley. Yeah, we were playing at Penn State. He had hit a huge patch of turbulence, and he was freaking out, like, because we did, the plane just kept free falling every now and then, and the pilot was on the radio just saying, you know, everything's okay, it's not that big of a deal, but he is scared to fly. And at one point I turned around and I saw him, he had taken his shirt off inexplicably. I don't know what he was doing. And he was just grabbing onto the seat, the little armrest on the seat, and it was just like tensed up really badly.
The description in the book is much funnier.
Go ahead. Yeah. So I noticed this, and this is like one of those times where it probably would just been best if I kept my mouth shut. But I at the time that movie We Are Marshall had come out, and it was the tragic story about the Marshall team that passed away in the plane crash. But I made the joke. I said to him, just think, if we crash, then they'll make a movie about us or something like that. That's the good news, which, like, it's not even that funny of a joke, but like I said it, and it's pretty insensitive probably towards the Marshall people, but I said it just to like get a rise out of him and upset him. And it definitely worked, and he definitely wanted to kill me. He ended up not talking to me for like a month and a half because he was so upset that I even brought the possibility of crashing into his mind. So I don't know. That's one time I definitely crossed the line, I think.
Stanley, in Indiana, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning. I'd just like to ask Mark, what high school did he play basketball for in Indiana?
I played for Brownsburg High School on the west side of Indianapolis.
Oh, okay. Mark, my son, he also played high school ball for Union County on the opposite side of the state. And Union County is a small county. And Indiana joins Ohio, the state line there. And I just wondered, I didn't know where you were, went to school at. And he also played college ball for Earlham College, a small college in Richmond, Indiana.
Okay.
But there's, you know, I just wondered, I saw you on TV here, and I just wondered, figured my son might have played again you somewhere, but evidently not, because you was on the opposite side of the state.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this year they won just pitches, and for good measure, their high school won the sectional this year, and they got knocked off a school tutor in Indianapolis this year.
Yeah, Park Tutor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
They knocked us off in the first round in the regional. But it's good to talk to you, and good luck with your
whatever you're doing
there. And it's good to talk to you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Stanley, for the call. Take care. From Jim on Facebook, speaking of small schools, he asks, was Mark recruited by smaller schools, and does he think he would have had significant playing time? Any regrets about not going to a smaller school?
Yeah, I was recruited by a lot of smaller schools, mostly Division II, Division III, NAIA. I mean, there's some Division I, like Evansville in Indiana, and like UNC Wilmington. I was getting recruited by Harvard, was recruiting me. So I got a lot of it was mostly small schools, yeah. And I always think back, like, should I have gone to a small school? Because I probably would have played more. I mean, I definitely would have played more, because I didn't really play at all at Ohio State. It's easy to say that I made the right decision now that I got a book deal out of everything, and, you know, I kind of became well known as a walk-on. But I think even if none of this would have happened, I still would have been happy with my decision, because my dream had always been to play Big Ten basketball, and even though I wasn't playing as much as what I had dreamed about playing, I was still kind of accomplishing that dream. And I don't know, I was able to do a lot of cool things that I'll be able to look back on when I'm older that I don't think I would have been able to do at a smaller school.
David and Lewis Center, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
I had a question. Do you still stay in touch with Mike Conley and Greg Oden? And if so, how are they doing? Especially, how's Greg doing dealing with all his injuries the last few years?
Yeah, I still keep in touch with those guys. I mean, during the NBA.
Could you turn your radio down, David?
Yeah, it was my GPS. Sorry about that. My radio's off.
Okay.
I keep in touch with those guys. They, during the basketball season, it's harder because they're always traveling and busy and all that kind of thing. But I mean, Greg, I know, is in Indianapolis right now, and I actually am going to see him pretty soon. He's in as high of spirits as you can be for a guy who's had as many surgeries as he's had, but I don't know. I mean, I haven't really talked to him about, like, what his plan is for getting back on the court or anything like that, or, like, how he feels physically, but I know that he's kind of struggling mentally, just because he's a guy who takes everything personally, and even though it's not his fault that he keeps getting hurt, he definitely feels responsible, and I know that he kind of thinks of himself as a bit of a failure, which is not fair at all to say, but I don't know. I just try to encourage him as much as I can, and tell him that he's a great guy. He's a lot of fun to hang out with, and if you ever get the chance to meet him, I'm sure you'll think the same way. And it's a shame that he can't play, but I think if he doesn't ever get back on the basketball court, he's still set for life with all the money he's got, and he's had a good basketball career thus far.
Great, good to hear you keeping his head up. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
Eugene in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. I wanted to congratulate, and I even forgot the young man you're talking to.
Mark Titus.
Yes, Mark. I think you really learned a wonderful lesson of taking advantage of being on the bench and saying, you know what, I'm going to stay here. The reason I say this, I've been in education, sales, and everything, and, you know, 95% of us support people. And a lot of the guys I've known get to the top aren't very happy. But I like your attitude. I'd put you on the team in a minute, but I'm happy for you, and I like.
Thank you.
And I like your jokes.
Oh, thank you.
Have you read the book?
No, not yet. Okay. I didn't even know about it. I was flipping across the dial.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might have to do that.
Yeah, you might.
Thank you.
Because I can't talk much about the book in the air.
Okay,
okay,
well,
Eugene.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Bye. You. Well, let's get to Pete real quick here. Hi, Pete. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Mark, I'm about halfway through the book, and I really like it. It's pretty funny, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
The question that I had, I suppose, I can understand your position, you know, walk on, you're not so worried about getting in or whatnot, but how does the coach deal, or, like, how do you guys, the players, handle, you know, you have stars, Mata uses a short bench, you know, all the guys that have to kind of sit there, they're used to playing big minutes. You know, how does that get dealt with, you know, in the locker room amongst the players and the coaches?
It's not really talked about amongst the team. I mean, some of the guys were up, get upset, obviously, at not playing a lot. I think he's had one guy, I think, transfer pretty much every year from the program because they don't play a lot. But it's not really something that gets brought up, I guess, amongst the team. But it definitely creates a lot of tension. I know in practice, we split up when we scrimmage. It's always the five, like, starters are on one team, and the guys who don't play quite as much are on the other team, and it kind of becomes, there's a little bit of a rift in that regard, because they go, you know, you go against the same five guys every day in practice, and so it kind of splits the team that way. But I mean, as far as, like, team unity, I don't think it really, I don't know, I mean, I guess it maybe does a little bit, it kind of splits the team a little bit, but in the locker room, I think we're all cool with each other. Individually, though, that definitely created a lot of tension, and there's some stories in the book where guys who weren't getting a lot of playing time kind of lashed out at me because they were frustrated that they weren't playing, and then, you know, I have a history of provoking people, so I probably provoked them at the wrong time when they were frustrated at not playing, and then a fight broke out, so... But yeah, I mean, as far as a team, I mean, that sort of thing, like, never really gets discussed amongst the players or anything.
You mentioned that the scrimmages were some of your favorite times because it was where you got to really play.
Yeah, I mean, I got to really play. That was like those are my games, scrimmages. I mean, the games that we actually played were like off days to me. I just threw on a jersey and sat there. So, yeah, the scrimmages and practice every day were like my time to shine, I always thought.
Let me ask you one quick thing. Does Bill Simmons take any credit for discovering you, or did he try to anyway?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Of course he does.
Great. All right, we'll keep it up, man. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Pete. In an article in The Plain Dealer in 2010, you talked about ending your career with OSU basketball and how that would affect your relevance in the world, since your blog was based on your insider status. So, and now you've written the book and that sort of thing, but how many books...
Exactly.
Are you going to squeeze out of that?
Yeah.
I don't know. You probably could go on and write lots more books. But what do you feel about that relevance?
I'm not really worried about it, I guess. I mean, people make fun of me for having my 15 minutes of fame as this famous bench warmer or whatever, and I'm going to go away. But I don't know. I don't really ever think about anything like that. I just try to write what I think's funny and tell stories that I have. And if I run out of stories and no one seems to care anymore, then I'll find something else to do. But I don't know. I think as far as the concept of the Club Trillion thing, I think that'll be around for a while. I mean, people seem to be really excited about it, and I don't know. I mean, I give out an award every year now. It's this replica wrestling belt that it costs like $1,500, and it's this huge, gold plated, just like you'd see on the WWE or whatever.
Right.
And I give out this award to the walk-on in college basketball who gets the most trillions, which I don't think we've talked about that. The trillion is when you play 1 minute and don't do anything while you're out there. So your box score says 1 minute played followed by a bunch of zeros, or a trillion as we would call it. So I give out this belt to the whichever walk-on around the country gets the most trillions in the season, and it's kind of like a fun contest. And so from that regard, people are still all about getting the trillions and having fun on the bench and that sort of thing. So I'm not sure that'll.
Well, you've used it for charity and fundraising too.
Yeah. I think we raised like $50,000 when I was a senior at Ohio State from selling my T-shirts. So, I mean, I don't know if my story ends today, it's a great story, I think, for me to look back on and have a lot of fun with. So I'm not really too worried about what happens next.
But you did try out for the Harlem Globetrotters.
I did try out for the Harlem Globetrotters. I was there at like a 3-day mini camp, and it was the exact opposite of what I expected, and at the same time everything I expected, which is kind of doesn't make any sense, but it was completely unorganized. It was kind of chaotic. It was a mess, and it was not quite as glamorous as I thought it would be when I was 8 years old watching them on TV.
Who didn't love them? One question, we're running out of time, but I'm wondering, I read, it's kind of like when I read Art Schleister's memoir, and now yours. You guys really get into describing those games and those plays and stuff. I tend to just skip over them. But I was wondering, do you keep notes on games, or
no,
do you go back and look at the reruns?
This is amazing. You should, if you talk to any athlete ever.
You remember every?
I remember every. I mean, I remember scoring 29 points against Zionsville my sophomore year in high school, I remember playing in eighth grade. I had 16 points against this team. It's just weird. I don't know how athletes do it, but every athlete I've ever met in my life is the same way. I just remember small details about every game.
Well, did you ever have anybody call you and say, that's not the way it went? That's not the way it went down. Everyone can make a mistake.
Sometimes, yeah, but for the most part, though, I get it pretty right. In the book, I researched, I double checked, because I was lucky enough at Ohio State, all of our games were, written about online and stuff
that.
Sure,
so
I could just go back and check box scores and stuff like that. But, for the most part, though, I get it pretty spot on, because it's just a weird thing that you'll, if you ever talk to an athlete, it's funny. They remember just the smallest. I mean, everyone remembers their big games, but it's weird that athletes can somehow remember.
Well, you remember the scrimmages.
You remember the scrimmages, so it's weird.
Well, I want to thank you, Mark Titus, for joining us today. It's been fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Mark Titus, sports blogger and author of Don't Put Me in, Coach, My Incredible NCAA Journey from the End of the Bench to the End of the Bench. Thanks to the All Sides staff, Linda Taylor, my producer, associate producer Amy Jurevich, All Sides intern Corinne Gleckler, and All Sides production assistant Ian Sheik. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.